You're listening to Discovering Multifamily, where we discuss all educational topics in commercial real estate with an emphasis on multifamily apartment investing via syndication. And now, your hosts, former NFL fullback Brian Leonard and Anthony Scandariato.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Discovering Multifamily Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Scandariato, here with Red Knight Properties. And today we have a special guest here with us, Gideon Pfeffer. And he is the CEO and managing partner of the GSH Group and is responsible for all different types of strategic partnership initiatives, overseeing investment performance and approving decisions on investments, acquisitions, etc. He oversees the daily operations as well. Over the past 5 years, he's assembled a portfolio of over 7,500 apartment units in five different states, which is pretty impressive. And prior to that, he aggregated single-family homes in the Midwest and Southeast, and working with institutional investors at the time. And, you know, now he's focused on primarily multifamily investments and has had success there as well. We're recording this towards the end of 2023. So what we're going to talk about on this podcast, and particularly, and it'll be very, very relevant is the opportunity for acquiring multifamily over the next few years. Seems that we're in the height of the, hopefully towards the height of the Fed interest rate increase cycle. And, you know, there's going to be some pretty good buying opportunities, I would have to imagine, over the next year or two for real estate. But I think really we need to focus on managing expectations, because a lot of investors in real estate haven't really seen a cycle like this in quite a while. So I think it'll be appropriate to kind of talk about, you know, expectations moving forward into the next few years. So Gideon, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, you got it, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So yeah, talk about what you've been able to do over the past, you know, several years with the multifamily properties and what you're working on now and kind of what you see moving forward.
Yeah, thanks. Like you mentioned, my background was high volume single family aggregation. I would buy packages of homes and fix them up and sell them to institutional buyers, and decided to move over to multifamily in 2017. And assembled the team with my two partners and began buying. Our primary target up into, you know, more recently initially was, you know, workforce housing. The term essential worker, you know, really gained prominence in 2020 with the pandemic, but that personal or person profile was always our resident profile. And we were, you know, value add bread and butter. Our bread and butter was our, you know, value add of well-located mature properties in good neighborhoods, properties that had been owned for a long time that could be elevated through renovation of, you know, common areas and amenities and maybe units as well, where we could create some value, both for the residents as well as for our investor partners. So we've had a lot of success, thankfully, through 2017 till now. You know, it hasn't been perfect. We've made investors a lot of money, and I think we've enhanced the living conditions and services and amenities for residents at our communities. And you know, we're not immune to external market factors. So, you know, we've struggled with some of the properties we bought kind of at the end of the real estate cycle in late 2021 and early 2022. We've experienced significant operating expense increases due to inflation and as well as like the insurance industry and property taxes and things like that. Things that, you know, when you bought a property in 2021, when we bought a property in 2021, and you're looking behind, you know, the last 3 years, what were operating expenses, and put that into the pro forma by, you know, late 2021 and 2022, you know, a lot of expenses were 30-40% higher than they were, you know, in 2018, 19, and 20. So, you know, not to mention just simple unit turns, you know, just the labor to paint and put down new flooring and the cost of material. So, you know, we felt that across our whole portfolio. And, you know, as it relates to the topic that we talked about before this podcast and what you just introduced, I mean, I think that from a bottom line perspective, I speak to investors all the time, whether they're investors with me already, people that have been investing with us for the last 7 years, people that have invested with us just over the last one or two, people that aren't investors with us but are in multifamily. I think there's a general consensus, both with like kind of your smaller high net worth accredited investors who we work with, that, you know, as well as, you know, institutional capital, that people are kind of waiting. You know, money is waiting. We read about hundreds of billions of dollars on the sideline waiting for opportunities in distressed CRE, commercial real estate, right? What I'm trying to get through to investors in general, you know, again, we don't typically work with institutional capital. We work with high net worth accredited investors, is if we believe that we're at the top or about to be at the top of the interest rate cycle, and that the Fed will reduce interest rates. Look, I don't think that the Fed will reduce interest rates to where they were. We're not, I think the days of 3% long-term fixed interest rates are gone for the foreseeable future. But, you know, if you believe that that interest rates will come down 100 basis points, 150 basis points, that's significant value to unlock from a cap rate perspective in real estate. So, you know, if there's an ellipsis curve of, you know, you're heading towards the top of the market, you're heading to the bottom of the market, you're at the bottom, and now you're in a recovery market, like, when do you start buying? Do you buy at the bottom, or do you buy when it starts going up, or do you buy maybe when it's approaching the bottom? And I kind of feel like that's where we are right now, because as the market recovers, as interest rates come down a bit, there's going to be a lot of value to be had. There's value there already. My fear, I think, at times is fear and frustration is just that folks are maybe, you know, bought into deals in 2021, 2022 at the top of the market, and now are gun shy, you know, because maybe some deals didn't go as planned, and now they're worried about, you know, is multifamily or commercial real estate a good bet? So, you know, that's something that I'm having a lot of conversations about right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of acquisitions that were made. I mean, including us, 2021, 2022. You know, it from what I've been seeing is a lot of the sponsors who are a little bit more nervous or cautious moving forward took on floating rate short-term debt. So they're going to have to pay those loans back relatively quickly. And if the value creation isn't there, it's going to be tough to refinance until, like you said, when things kind of loosen up a little bit. So, you know, what do you see the opportunity? Like, how do you know when the bottom is? Are we at the bottom right now? And again, we're recording this end of November 2023. So when does the shoe drop? Everybody thought the shoe was going to drop in 2020. Right. A lot of people have been talking about shoes to drop for over a decade. So, you know, if you're going to sit on your hands, you might be sitting on your hands for another 10 years, right, not doing anything. So how do you position yourself to kind of ride out different economic cycles? Obviously, fixing your debt long-term is, in my opinion, the best way to do that. But what else is there?
Well, I'll answer it a couple of different ways. So, you know, in 2017, when we started buying, there were folks that said, are you sure you want to buy? We've been on this run for 7 years. You know, we could be at the top of the market. And that made me scared. But thank goodness I didn't listen to them. And I actually did purchase, because there was another 4 years ahead of us of probably the best buying opportunities. Or maybe not the best buying opportunities, but the best value creation and growth over that time period. So we purchased about 7,800 units since 2017. We've sold about 1,500 units. So we're around 6,300 right now in our portfolio. I wish I would have sold more. You know, hindsight's 20/20. And we also got, you know, kind of hit or stuck with some, you know, short-term floating rate bridge. We're working with our lender on five properties right now that we have that type of debt on. for modification just to ride out the next few years until, you know, continue to increase NOI and hopefully interest rates settle down a bit. And look, I've got investors in those deals where, you know, we're not paying distributions, you know, and the business plan has completely changed. And I think that's difficult for folks who are not in commercial real estate on a day-to-day basis. We look at GSH real estate as a long-term play, right? And properties are pieces on a chessboard, right? And not every deal is going to go according to plan, but if you're invested in the real estate market over the long term, you're going to do well. And typically, you know, to oversimplify, every 10 years or so, there's a change in the economic cycle. Sometimes it's every sometimes it's 7 years, sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's 5 years. You know, the last dip was 2008 to 2010. So it's been 11 years, right? 12 years since we've seen it. So I think that we personally and investors kind of got used to real estate being just a safe, easy bet, right? And so those of us who purchased in 2021 and 2022 kind of got caught buying properties at valuations that were at the top of the market. Having said that, that shouldn't keep us from looking forward and understanding that because interest rates went up so quickly, so high, so quickly, and that nobody foresaw, not even the Fed, you know, that's created a complete dislocation of value, right? As interest rates go up, values go down. So if we believe that we're at the top of the interest rate cycle, like I said before, then we're probably at the lowest point of the value cycle. And so if we buy today properties that are well located, that we believe that we can either that are performing well and we can hold and continue to have them perform well, or properties that we can create value in, then the wind's going to be at our back. It's going to be benefiting us, the current market condition, because as the Fed has raised interest rates to slow the economy, we're seeing that economy has been slowed, right? And the way that they kickstarted again, maybe 6 months from now, maybe 12 months from now, maybe 18 months from now, I don't know when, their tool is basically to lower rates again. So when we lower rates, values go up. So there's a organic opportunity to take advantage of value creation if we start buying today.
All right. What states are you invested in?
So currently we're in heavy in the Midwest, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana. We also have properties in Maryland and Florida. We're somewhat location agnostic. We've done a lot of business in Texas, Nashville, some of the other smile states. I've done a lot of work in my single family days in those markets. And so I think our focus will continue to be to invest in our backyard since we're based in Michigan, but also be heavily focused on business friendly states.
Right. Is there a particular market you like more than the others?
I mean, I love markets with population growth, right? Population growth, job growth, the need for housing. And in a way, in today's multifamily environment, it's a bit contradictory because there are markets in Texas, markets in the Carolinas that have an exorbitant amount of units coming online this year and next year, which will probably soften the multifamily market. I think that creates another opportunity for us because multifamily starts while the deliveries, the finished product are, you know, there's abundance of those this year and next year. The starts, because of the rapid rise in interest rates, have slowed. So new developments, new units being created last year and this year are 60-70% down, right? So once you cross over the threshold of 2025 into 2026 and 27, there's going to be a need for units pushing demand up. That'll probably correlate with this drop in interest rates that I believe is going to happen. And so again, you can probably buy in markets like Charlotte, Raleigh, Houston, Dallas, Austin, Nashville, these areas that have a deluge of units coming online, take advantage of the fact that there's going to be a lot of units, take advantage of the fact that that developers who are building these units probably and that are about to be delivered probably created pro formas at exit cap rates that are lower than today's actual cap rates and are going to need to get out in some way, shape, or form, and jump in and take advantage of that market dislocation.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense. And so you said in the beginning you're focused on, is it, you said workforce housing?
We've done a lot of workforce housing up into this point, and we'll continue to buy kind of your B class, maybe 90s and newer type product. We have bought some, we built some, and we bought some brand new A class units more recently in the last year or two. Love that product. Obviously, you know, less repair and maintenance, less deferred maintenance, but value creation often ends up in kind of the older vintage properties, stuff that was built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We're kind of waiting on that. I think that values are going to go lower on those properties as the maturities happen that you mentioned earlier, right? People getting out of bridge, needing to get out of bridge, needing to sell. I think there's a lot of that product that's going to come online that's going to push values down, and we'll try and take advantage of that as well.
Nice. And so you mentioned something about pausing distributions, kind of aligning expectations with the reality of the marketplace and what's going on. Could you talk about how to have those conversations and how they can be constructive more rather than combative or whatnot? What have you been experiencing with that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Look, I mean, nobody's happy when a business plan doesn't go according to plan, but there are factors that are outside of our control at times, right? As multifamily owner operators, sponsors, we do the best we can with the information as it's presented. And when things change rapidly, like interest rates and, you know, we have to navigate that, right? We have to do the best as a fiduciary to our investors. So GSH has a very robust investor bench. We've got well over 1,000 individual investors, some investors who've been investing with us from the beginning that are in all of our deals, some investors that are new to us that are in some of the later deals and everything in between. Our investors that have been with us for a long time have seen great growth and great returns. Our investors that are newer and bought into properties in 2021 and 2022 probably have a different impression of us, right? Because they got into deals that where the business plans have changed. To your point or question in terms of how do you communicate that with investors, my strategy is what you see is what you get, and being transparent and being accessible. I found that when I'm and our organization is communicating through multiple medium on a regular and consistent basis, investors feel secure, right? So we are sending out monthly updates on every property. We're sending more comprehensive quarterly reports with distributions on properties that are getting distributions. I've also started doing webinars on every property, originally properties that weren't going according to plan. Now I'm doing it on every single property in our portfolio twice a year, but every quarter I'm doing webinars where people can hear my update on the property and do like a Q&A. And then I'm always offering people to send me an email or send me an email. We can set up a time to talk. Most investors don't reach out personally to talk. Sometimes I get emails asking questions. My investor relations team get emails asking questions. We'll talk to investors, but we're always available and accessible and transparent. And I'd say for the most part, people are in acceptance of the reality of the situation on deals that have been hurt by external market environment stuff. But at the same time, I think that it'll make it harder to raise money on new deals from those investors. And that kind of correlates with the topic, right? Where it's like, how do we educate people who have gotten into real estate deals that have not going according to plan, whether they're my investors or our new potential prospective investors, and say, you know, look, real estate is a long game, and don't let some pain that you may have felt over the last 2 years disrupt your opportunity to get involved in probably what will be the best buying opportunity, you know, in a decade. There's a Warren Buffett quote that I like, and I'm gonna, you know, not do it justice, but I'll paraphrase, where it's basically like, you know, every 7 to 10 years, black economic clouds, you know, form in the sky, and then for a brief moment, it rains gold, right? And that's kind of where we are right now, and I think it's about to rain gold for the next year or two, and hopefully investors understand that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love the communication that you're providing your investors through various different forms of, you know, various different efforts, whether it's emails, webinars, you know, calls, whatever form. I think the communication is key. It's better to communicate, you know, if things are going both well and bad, right? Or just, yeah, like you said, slower or not according to plan. You know, is the last thing people want is no communication, and then kind of all the red flags go off, right? So,
right.
I think that's definitely key. So if to 2024, so you're focused, you're getting hopefully back into buying mode, I would have to imagine, right? So what are you doing to prepare for that right now?
Yeah, I mean, we're hopeful that we'll be back into buying mode, right? It's still, it's a little difficult to find things that make sense to us. But we are, you know, creating a, not creating, but we are, creating new, systems within our CRM, gathering a lot of data in terms of, what developers are, have new, new units, new developments, coming online in the, over the course of the next 18 to 24 months in markets that we want to be in, setting up processes and ongoing reach outs to folks like that, analyzing different data aggregation sites that we have access to, like TREP, that tracks, you know, mortgages and mortgage performance, so we can see, you know, who's struggling, who might be struggling, who might not be, and setting up systems to reach out to those people, and just solidifying our relationships with local brokerage community, the builders community, the property management community, so people know, people who are influencers of or have access to inventory when it comes available know that we're, you know, somebody, we're a group that could be a viable option for whatever seller may come to the table.
And what kind of conversations are you hearing from the brokerage community right now in terms of inventory?
That it's low, but that they're having a lot more conversations, you know, a lot more broker opinions of values are being done. I think that owners are coming to terms with the fact that they're going to have to do something when their bridge loans mature or their short-term debt matures. So there's a lot of valuations going on. And I think that it seems like owners are starting to come to terms with the new reality of value and perhaps having conversations of that nature with their investment partners because they're going to have to, you know, pull their head out of the sand at some point and make some hard decisions.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's definitely what we're experiencing as well. Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens going into 2024. So Gideon, how can my audience find you, learn more about you, connect with you?
So thanks for asking. Our website is www.gshrealestate.com. Again, gshrealestate.com. And if you want to shoot me an email to continue this conversation or ask any questions, my email address is Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N, at gshrealestate.com.
Excellent. And we'll have a link to Gideon's website as well as his social media in our social media descriptions and on our iTunes as well. So, and if you liked what you heard and or saw today, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps our message get out to a greater audience. That's just the way the algorithm works. And look forward to staying in touch, Gideon, and cheers to a great 2024.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.